All right, we're going to start here on the top of Nun Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing about animals and birds that fall down. And when they fall, what is it that they're falling into? And when they fall into these items, does the impact cause damage to them or does it not cause damage to them? I mean, the internal organs, are they considered to be intact when they land on the item? Is it a cushioning item? Or is it an item that is taut and therefore it causes the impact to be felt by the body of the animal, and it causes what we call risuk evarim, causes some sort of internal damage to the animal that makes it into a trefa. So here we're continuing from the list that we had started yesterday. The Gemara now continues. All right, choladak. If we're talking about fine sand, loy cheshinan, we don't worry about it. Fine sand diffuses the impact because it spreads. It doesn't compact, and therefore when the animal hits it, it diffuses the impact by spreading or sliding away. Cholagas, on the other hand, if you take coarse sand, then it compacts, and since it compacts, it makes the animal take the entire pressure of the blow, and it doesn't diffuse any of the fall. Avak drachim, talking about the dust of the ways. Chayshinan, there it's compacted. When you walk down the street, people walk on it a lot, it compacts the dirt, and therefore that's a very hard surface, and the body of the animal will take all the impact. Tivna, I'm talking about straw. Rashi over here points out it's tivna, both of chitim and silrim, wheat or barley straw. Vavid bizago, but it's put into a bundle. Then chayshinan, since it's bundled, again, it does not diffuse the impact. The entire impact is felt by the animal because of the compaction of the straw. Therefore, chayshinan, then we worry about some sort of internal damage to the animal. Lo avid bezago, on the other hand, if it was not bundled, then lo chayshinan. Again, because the straw is strewn about, the straw creates a softer surface. It diffuses the impact. And therefore, we won't worry about risukei verim when it comes down on the straw. So, oh, how high is the fall? The fall has to be at least from 10 tefachim high, and it has to be that the animal was unaware of the impending fall. It has to be that the animal didn't jump, or know that someone was going to push it, or something was going to push it. All right, now, chite v'chol demitnayu, when you're talking about wheat, and anything in that category, that species, chayshinan, we worry about it, because, again, these are items that are hard, they don't diffuse, they don't allow the animal to slip away or diffuse the pressure of the impact. And therefore, we worry about risuke varim, sare, barley, v'chod deminayu, and anything is under that, species like shifon, like rye, then chayshinan. Our Gemara's girsa is chayshinan, which would make it the same as the wheat. On the other hand, you can see on the side here that the Maram Shif had a girsa that said lo chayshinan, and that would be a reason to distinguish between chite and sare. Kol minei kitniot, any of the legumes in that family, ein behem mishum risuke evarim. They don't have a problem of the impact affecting the animal because all of the legumes are slippery. They don't compact well. They slide away from each other. And therefore, when the animal comes in, that'll diffuse the impact. Levar, the exception to that rule is levar min rubia. The exception to this rule of the kidneyot is fenugreek. Now, the next list here, and this is a little bit difficult of exactly how to translate these words. Chimtzi, Rashi in Yevamot says chimtzi is a min kidneyot, so it doesn't really help us. But as such, one of the translations was that it was a chickpeas, and an alternative would be chimtzi to be peas. Ein bo mishum risuk evarim. They do not have a din of risuk evarim, you can see why. They are rounded, they're slippery, and therefore they would diffuse the impact. Chimtzi. Now, again, the translation here is not clear what these are. Seems to be that there's something like a lentil of sorts. And an alternative would be chimtzi to be peas and chimtzi to be chickpeas. The way Tosafot reads the Gemara, this can't be a lentil, but I'll loosely translate it as a lentil. Shum risuk evarim. That does have a problem with risuk evarim because it does compact. And since it compacts, then we do have to worry about it. I just note over here, Tosafot says over here, it svarim de garse bater hachi. There's some svarim that after kitniot say that they don't have risuke virim, which is our svarim. That chimtzi ein behem mishum risuke virim. Chimtzi yesh behem risuke virim. Kein legir sata kuntrus mashma. Dolavi b'chlau kitniot. Sounds like from the Gemara and from Rashi that these two items, the chimtzi and the chimtzi, are not under the subcategory of kitniot. Otherwise, why didn't it mention it? If we already mentioned kitniot, then why do we have to mention these as separate from them? So if that's the case, it seems a little strange, because we know that the items that we're translating for chimtzi and chimtzi are items that are subsumed under the category of kitniot. So he says, v'yesh lamar tosvot, the kitniot mari bedvarim dakim. The kitniot are talking about things that are very thin and very small, kemo adashim, like lentils, v'orez and rice, v'dochan and millet. So those items are much thinner and smaller items. So when we're talking about the chiftzi and the chimtzi, those are larger, much larger balls. If it's chickpeas, it makes sense. With peas, I'm not sure if that makes as much sense. And that's obviously why, according to Tosfot, the word chiftzi can't be lentils, because Tosfot says lentils are included under the category of kitniyot. So Tosfot says they are all kitniyot that we're discussing here. It's just that they're subdividing the category of kitniyot to the smaller, thinner types of materials that are all included under the word kitniyot. And then the other items, like the chiftzi and the chimtzi, those are items that are larger forms of kitniyot. So they are under kitniyot, but they're just a slightly different variation of the kitniyot. Now the Gemara gives a klal de milta. Here's the general principle. Kol midei de mishrik, that anything that is slippery and diffuses the impact, ein bo mishum risukei varivim, then we don't worry about the internal organs being damaged. Lo mishrik, if it does not diffuse, it's not slippery, but rather compact, the material compacts, Yeshbo mishum risuke verim. Then we will worry about the impact to the animal, and we will worry about the internal effects of the impact on the animal. And as Shaul mentioned before, that's all within the context of what we said earlier, and we'll see this again in Rashi in a couple minutes, that if the animal, if it waits mate-late, then after 24 hours it will be okay. Even within 24 hours, if it stands up and walks, then it'll be fine and it won't require a bidikah. If it just stands up and doesn't walk, then it will require a bidikah. And we'll see in a second whether that possibility exists. Can we still do, or can we really do a bedikah? Now the Gemara asks about davuk. Davuk is like the word, the modern Hebrew word of devek. As Rashi says here, in the Loaz, it's glued. It's glue. This is a glue trap that they used to use to capture the bird. So a bird got captured on the glue trap and then falls with the glue trap on it. Now the glue trap works by catching onto the wing of the animal. And now the bird is unable to fly anymore or to slow its impact when it's coming down or to cushion its impact on the way down with its wing. And therefore now it falls without any protection. And the Gemara wants to know, what does that mean? So Rashi Shari. Rashi says, smutar, it's not a problem. Meir says it's a problem. Now Bechad Gafel, if the glue trap is only on one wing, nobody argues the shari that it's mutter there, because then he has the other wing to cushion the impact and to keep him afloat. Kli plige, where do they argue b'tshiregape? When both wings are caught. Manda amar, manda asar, the one who says it's asur amalacha hechen nikum. There's no way for it to cushion the fall. There's no way for it to brace itself. Manda shari, the one who says it is mutter amalacha hefshar denikum ha'ikve degape. You can get it where in the area where they clip the wings, meaning that where the wings attach to the body. Even though it can't spread its wings and it can't get its wings up, it still has a little bit that can get underneath between the attachment to the body and the wings. It can get a little bit of air under there and cushion the impact a little bit, and therefore it'll be mutar. Vigadam, right? And there's another lashon which says, betray gape. When you're talking about both wings that are caught, kuliam pligado asir. Everybody agrees that it's a asur there because it has no way to cushion its impact. Ki pligay bechad gapo. The argument devolves around a single wing that is caught. Mandushari, the one who says mutar melechayev shad the parach bechad gafel. He still has the other wing that he can use to cushion the impact. Mandasar, the one who says also given b'hai lo matzi parach b'hai namelum patzach. He needs balance. You can't just fly with one wing. You need both wings to fly. If one of them's down, it's not going to be able to cushion the impact. Ve'ochata, the locha is betray gapi asir. If the bird falls with both wings caught on the trap, then it's asur. We worry about risuke verim. Bechad gapel, if it's only caught on one wing, then it's mutar, because we assume that the other wing helps it to cushion the impact. Now, Rashi, on this, mentions betray gapi asur. He says, Ela im kein amad valach. The exception to that rule is if it gets up and walks. So yes, it's asur. It's asur unless we have evidence to the contrary that it shouldn't be asur. And if we have evidence to the contrary that it shouldn't be asur, then we allow it, and that's a case of amad valach. If it gets up and walks. If it gets up and walks, we know that it's not a problem. All right, now there's a very fundamental Rashi. It's a major machlok between Rashi and the Baal Halachot Gudolot over here, and really it's almost a shkofik argument about how we deal with this idea of bdika. The Baal Halachot Gudolot over here says, it's in the Rashi where it says Trei Gapi Asur, then it says Katov Baal Halachot Gudolot Koheche Debai Bdika. In all these instances that we just mentioned in Nefula, we're now at the end of the sugya of Nefula. All these instances where we require a bdika. That was only in the time of the Chachamim they could do it. They knew what they were looking for. So since they knew what they were looking for, that's they could do a bdika. We don't have that expertise. We're not going to rely on ourselves to do this. That's the Baal Halachot Gedolot. Baal Halachot Gedolot says that even if the animal is not a treifa, if you could do the bdika, we just don't have the capabilities to do the bedika. Since we don't have that capability, if it requires a bedika, it's going to remain a treifa because we don't want to rely on ourselves to do such a bedika. Now, there's an amazing statement by Rashi. Veli nira, Rashi says. De'en lo de dayan elamashe enav ro'ot. The dayan can only do what he sees. Umutar li smoch alav. And we can rely on what we know and what we see. Dichtiv velo shofet asher yebi amimahem. The Torah tells you that you go up to the shofet at that time. Even if the shofet's not Shmuel, even if the shofet is not Moshe and Aaron, you still go to the shofet. Aval hu yizaher yafeh. He does the best that he can do. He brings all the butchers in town, and all the experts. He makes sure that he gets exactly what he needs. If he does the right research, he does the right, whatever he can do, if he gathers as much as possible, then he can give a psak halacha, and he's not limited by this statement that the previous generations knew what to do, and we don't know what to do. It's a very, very strong hashkafic argument here between the Bahag and Rashi. The Bahag says that we don't have these capabilities anymore. They had some sort of expertise that we're not given, or we don't have, and therefore we're no longer allowed this bedika to take place. Rashi says you can't say that. A shofet, the dayan, is empowered to act with all the information that's in his hands. As long as he takes every piece of information that's available to him, then he should be able to make a decision based on what he can see. So he can check, just like they checked in previous generations. Okay, he's not as big an expert as the previous generations. That's not a necessity. The necessity is to do the best he can do, and then we'll rely on him in that case. So it's an amazing machloket here between the Bahag and Rashi, whether they have the ability to do bedika today after, for instance, like this, a case of nifula, where it falls down, and if, for instance, it was amad, velo halach, where it does require a bedika, and according to Tosafot, if it waited me'eit le'eit, if it waited 24 hours, it also requires a bedika. Waiting 24 hours in of itself is not sufficient. You also require a bedika after the 24-hour period. So in all these instances, according to the Bahag, it's a treifa. According to Rashi, it's fine because we rely on the shoftim. But where's the yamim that they're nimsaim? All right, now, Gemara moves on to the next piece of the Mishnah, and that is nishtabru rov tzalotah, case where it broke majority of its ribs. So the underlying assumption here is that we're talking about the 22 ribs, 11 ribs on each side, and you have to have the rov be broken. In a second, we'll give what the qualification is that I'm telling you that there are 11 ribs on each side. And that the Gemara will do in a second. Tanu Rabbanan, Elohein Rov Tzlaot. What is the Rov? When we're talking about the majority, what does that mean? Shesh Mikan v'shesh Mikan? Does it mean 6 and 6? Meaning that the majority of 22 ribs, 11 on each side, 11 would be half, 12 will be a majority. So the composition of that 12, does that mean there have to be 6 broken on each side? Oh, is it also sufficient? Achadas for Mikan v'achat Mikan. 11 on one side and 1 on the other side. So the Rov Tzlaot can be either of those two. Meaning that you can reach the Rov in one of two ways. You can have 11 and 1, or you can have 6 and 6. Now, Amar Ziri. Ziri now brings a qualification and says, Umechatzian kapea shidra. That the breaking of the ribs has to take place in the section, the half of the rib that's closer to the spinal cord. The ribs extend out of the spinal column, the spinal cord, and they come around the cavity of the body. So when they come around the cavity of the body, the rib, the length of the rib, if it's the half of the rib that is closer to the cavity of the body, the underside of the animal, that half doesn't matter. That's not called a broken rib that makes a difference. It's only when the rib is broken within the first half of the rib that it extends out of the shidra, out of the spinal column. Amar Rabbi Bar Chano, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and here's the qualification. This is how we know that we're talking about the 22 ribs here is, ubitzlaot gidolot, we're only talking about the large-sized ribs, sheyesh bahen moach, that have marrow in them. So the number of large-sized ribs that have marrow in them are 22, 11 on each side. There are additional ribs that are either small or they do not contain marrow in them, both before the set of 11 ribs as well as after the set of those 11 ribs. So Amar Ula, Ben Zakkai Amar. Now who this Ben Zakkai is not clear. Rashi says, I don't know who he is. Lo Yadana Mihu. Amar, he said, Ne'ekru. If the ribs are uprooted from their base, meaning that they've been severed at the point where they're attached to the vertebrae, then berov tzad echad. Then you only need a rov on one side. You only need 6 on the one side. You don't need the 6 of the other side. Nishtabru. If the ribs are broken, then berov shnei tzadim. Then you need 6 on each side. You need a rov on both sides. So the need for a rov on both sides will only be in a case of broken ribs. A case of ribs that are detached from the core, you'd only require a rove on the single side, on the one side of the animal. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ben Ne'akru, Ben Nishtabru. It makes no difference whether they were severed at the base or whether they're broken ribs, assuming, again, like Ze'iri, that they're broken at the half closer to the spinal column. Berov Shnei Tzadim. In any instance, you need a rove on both sides. You need 6 on each side, which would be the rove on each side. All right, I hear you. It seems to say that it has to split. They have to have six. It means six on one side or six on either side. I hear that you're saying that the Rashba is saying that's a purely account number. Ro b'tzad echad means six, and then the distribution of the six doesn't matter. And ro b'shnei tzad it means 12, and the distribution it doesn't matter either. So I can see both ways. I can see reading it both ways. I can see reading it that there's an absolute requirement of both sides, or that it's the total number of ribs that we're discussing over here. It's the quantity of ribs. So you could read it one of two ways. Again, you could read Rabbi Yochanan as referring to the number of ribs, the quantity of ribs that you need here, which means Rov Tzadecha would be 6 and Rov Shnei Tzadim means 12. Or you could read it that it's an absolute demand that there be ribs broken on both sides, meaning that there is 6 and 6, versus Rov Tzadecha that it'll be 6 on one side. So now we have a statement by Rav, which is going to occupy us to the bottom of the Amud here. Rav makes what seems to be a very simple statement, but then we're going to have a secondary conversation which throws questions on this statement of Rav. So now Amar Rav, Nekra Tzela V'chulya Ima. If you have a rib that is broken and it takes off a portion of the vertebrae with it, Trefa, then it's a Trefa. So you lost a rib and with that rib came off half of the vertebrae that it was attached to, then it's a Trefa. So now we have a statement. Amri Le Rav Kahana Rav Asi, the Rav, they asked a question of Rav. Nekra tzela mikan, if you lost the ribs on both sides, v'chulya kayemet, and the vertebrae remains in place. Mahu, what's the din? So I'm like, gistera kamritu? You're asking me about a case of a gistera? Gistera is a nevelo. It's not even a trefa, it's a nevelo de gamre. He says, why are you asking me about a case that's a nevelo? So the obvious problem that arose right now is that Rav just said that if you have a single rib that breaks with a portion of the chulya, a portion of the vertebrae on it, then that's only a trefa. Here you have the question from Rav Asi and from Rav Kahana. They ask about where the ribs are gone, but the vertebrae is totally there. And when the vertebrae is totally there, he calls that's an avela. So how could it be that Rav's calling that an avela, and the case that he gives is called the trefa? So Vaha Rav Nami Gistura Kamar, that's what Gemara asks. Rav's case, the case where it's Nekra Tzela V'chulya Ima, how come he calls that a trefa? That should be equivalent of a Gistura. So the Gemara says, no, Kikama Rav Tzela Belo Chulya. Rav, when he was talking about, he was talking just a rib without the vertebrae at all. All right, says, how can you say that? V'at Tzela V'chulya Kamar. Rav is pretty explicit that Nekru Atzela V'chulya Ima. He says that a part of the portion of the vertebrae went with it. So the Gemara says, okay, this is the way I understand Rav. Tzela V'chatzi Chulya. When we say that the rib came out, it was a rib and half of the vertebrae. Michlau. So from that, you would infer that the Rav Kahana, the Rav Asi, Tzela Belo Chulya. The Rav Asi and Rav Kahana are talking about a case where you're taking out the ribs without anything. They're leaving the vertebrae behind totally. And V'amar Lahu, Gistera Kamayatru. And then Rav is calling that a Gistera. So again, now you have the vertebrae back in place, and Rav's calling that a Gistera. V'amar Ula, and that was the quote we just saw before. Benzake Amar, Nekru Berov Tzad Echad. If it's Nekru, if they are taken off from the core, from the base of the vertebrae, the ribs are removed from there, then you'll need a rov of tzerechot. Nishtabru, berov shnei tzadim. If they're broken, then you need it on two sides. But you see, you still need a rov. Nobody suggests over here that you can have one rib gone, and then that makes it into a tray for an avela. We have this statement. You need a minimum of six over here that are nekru, that are taken out of the base. How could the Rav Kahana Rav Asi's case be a case where, oh yeah, the chuli is there, the ribs are gone from the base, and it's a nevela. It's not even a trefa. So Amar Lecha, no, this will explain. Hotam ze shelo keneged ze. The case of Ula that was quoting Ben Zakkai is a case where the ribs that are removed from the base are not the opposing ribs. Every vertebrae has two ribs that extend from it. So when we're talking about there's six ribs that are missing over here that were nekru, those six ribs don't necessarily have to be opposite each other. You can have alternating ribs that are taken out, and you can have alternating ribs. In that case, we don't worry about the fact that they're nekru, because we never have both sides that are nekru. The case of Rav Asi and Rav Kahana is hocha ze keneged ze. Their case, and the reason why it's a nevela is because it was taken off on both sides. Now you have a single vertebrae that's missing its ribs from both sides. So one says, okay, that works well according to Ula, who brought Ben Zakkai down. But now, v'amar Rabbi Yochanan. What are you going to do with Rabbi Yochanan Shita? Rabbi Yochanan Shita is Barov Shneit Tadim. He says in all instances you need 12. You need the Rov Shneit Tadim. Uberov Shneit Tadim e efshar to lokaim echad minayu ze keneged ze. In such a case, it's impossible that there's not at least one vertebrae that's missing a rib on both sides? Because what are your options? Again, depends how you read this Rabbi Yochanan. If you require it, Rabbi Yochanan means 12. Now, the 12 can distribute differently. It's either 11 and 1. Well, if you have 11 and 1, then one of the ribs, whichever one's on the other side, is opposite one of the 11. So the other possibility of distribution is 6 and 6. Well, if you distribute 6 and 6, what are you going to do? You start 6 ribs on the right side from the head and 6 ribs on the left side from the hindquarters. Okay, so there the shalok neged zeh. The only problem is there are only 11 ribs. So the 6th rib from both sides are going to end up being opposite each other. You can only get the 5 ribs. At most, you can end up with 5 ribs that are not opposite each other. But the 6th rib will have to be opposite another rib that's taken out. If that's the case, you do not have the distinction between the question of Rav Asi and Rav Kahana to the statements that we brought before from Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says, okay, Hotam, this is the distinction we're going to make. Hotam, the case of Rabbi Yochanan, is buchna below asita. Buchna is a tzela, it's a rib, below asita. Asita is the lower wing of the vertebrae where the rib is attached to the vertebrae. So over here, the case of Rabbi Yochanan, the case of Ula, those cases are talking about where ribs or neck crew are taken out, but the entire vertebrae remains intact. On the other hand, Hocha, our case is buchna vasita. Our case here, when we're talking about Kahana and Vasi, we're talking about a case where you took off the rib, and it, with it, it took off a piece of the vertebrae. Where it's attached to the vertebrae, it took that piece off with it. Where it says, Ihachi anu derav. Now we're back to Rav. That's exactly the case of Rav. Rav's case is where a rib went off, and it pulled out half of the vertebrae with it. So if in a case where Rav says that you pull out, you know, with a single rib, and you pull out half a vertebrae, it's a treifa, then a case where you're pulling out both sides, then it's certainly a treifa. So Lamar says, Lo shmilu derav. The answer is, they never heard what Rav said. They didn't know the statement of Rav. So now we don't have a problem of duplication because they never heard what Rav said. The Agmar wants to know, so then why didn't they just ask the question of Rav? Why are they asking about two ribs? Well, they could just ask the question of Rav. If it's missing one rib plus a part of the vertebrae with it, half the vertebrae with it, then that could have been their question. That could have been what they presented to Rav. Why are they presenting their question to Rav when it's two? So Agmar says, Savre. They said, Liboy Limine Chado. I will ask one question, the Parish Lantarte, that will tell us the answer to both of these instances, both in a case where both are missing, as well as one is missing. If we ask only about a single rib that is missing along with the piece of the vertebrae with it, if he tells it's a trefa, then Koshkein Tarte, then we can also extrapolate and say, of course, if there were two missing ribs, bone rib on each side, it's certainly a trefa. But Iyamarlan Kshera, on the other hand, if Rav says that a single one is Kshera, Gati Taktarte Kami Bailan, then we won't have an answer about two. If one is a Kshera, we don't know then when you have both ribs missing with the pieces of the vertebrae, what's the din? We won't have a conclusion from that. Where it says, Iyochi, if that's the case, Tashtanami. When they ask the question the other way around, the Kaboy Mine Tarte, now they ask the question of two. Ihan Icha Yamarlu Kshera, if he tells them it's Kshera, then Koshkein Chado. If the two are Kshera, then certainly one is Kshera. But if he tells them that it's a Trefa, Akati Chadami Bailu, then how do they know what the din is by one? Just because two are Trefa doesn't mean one is a Trefa, so how are they going to know the din by one? So Sabri, no, this is what they thought. Imkain Mirtoch Korotoch. He would get angry at us. If we're asking about two, if it's a Trefa, and it's even a Trefa by one, Rav's going to get angry that we're asking about such an obvious case of Trefa, when we should have been asking about the case, which is the determining case, or the borderline case, the threshold case, which is one rib missing. God, the trefa, if one's a trefa, tatami boy, what are you asking about two for? Rashi and Tosafot both asked the question, so why couldn't they have done that the opposite way around? On the opposite way around, when they ask is one kshera, and if it was really true that even two were kshera, he should get mad at them also there. Well, you're asking me about one if it's kshera? Even two is kshera. Why doesn't a rab get mad there and they can come to the same conclusion or extrapolate? The answer to that is, in one case, you're going the Kula, in one case, you're going the Chumra. By the case, if they ask about one rib and it's Kshera, Rav's not going to get angry at them. He's just going to tell them, yeah, it's Kshera. What, oh, they're going to be Machmer by two? Okay, fine, that's the Chumra. He's not going to get angry at them that they didn't ask about two. But over here, if they ask about two, and even one's a Trefa, they're going the Kula. And that's a problem, because then they would say, oh, two's a Trefa, but one's not a Trefa. That's not true, and that'd be going the Kula, and that would be problematic. So that's why Rav would get angry in that case. Not in the case of Kasher. So Gemara says, V'hakam relay. Well, if you think that's the way it's going to turn out, they asked him about two, and the truth is that even one is problematic. V'lo rotach. And Rav didn't get mad. Rav answered their question and said that it's a gistera, that it's a nevela. But Rav said already that even by one it's a trefa. So why didn't he get mad at them? Gemara says, Kevin dekamer lehu gistera kamritu hainu ritche. His answer to them is in anger. He's saying to them, what do you mean? What are you asking me about? This is like an animal that's sliced in half. It's not even a question. Fact is that he did get angry. I mean, he answered them in a way which suggested that their question was so obvious. They should have been asking about something that was a little less obvious. And therefore, they can conclude from that that both are problematic. Not only when both ribs are taken off with the piece of the vertebrae, but even if one rib is missing with the piece of the vertebrae, it will be a problem. Amar Rabba bar Rav Shila, Amar Rav Matno, Amar Shmuel. So now we have the name of Shmuel. Until now, we were doing the name of Rav. Now we have the name of Shmuel. Nekra tzala mi'ikara. You have a rib that's detached from its base. Vilgalgolet shenechbisa. If you have a skull, the skull bone that is shattered. It's interesting, Rashi uses over here the lashon of mintzira, which might be from the word mince. You know, that is shattered, broken to pieces. Biruba. Ubasar chufe etrova keres. Or the flesh that is underneath. This is what we saw yesterday. Underneath the rumen. Underneath the rove of the flesh that is connected to the rumen. If that is cut open. Trefa. All of these instances is a trefa. Now, Shmuel's statement, when you have a single rib that is detached from the vertebrae, in that instance, is he arguing on Rav? Or is he saying the same thing as Rav? So then it turns out to be a machloket Rashi and the Ravenu Tam. Rashi says over here, when it says a single rib that is detached, he says below asita, Rashi says, even without a piece of the vertebrae that's there. Not even without that piece, it's still considered to be a trefa. And that means that Shmuel is arguing on Rav, and he's machmir the gamre. It seems to be almost like an outlandish shita, which is that a single rib could make it into a trefa, even though it didn't take any piece of the vertebrae with it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam says when Shmuel said that the tzela was nekar, it was with a piece of the vertebrae, imasita, along with a piece of the vertebrae, and then Shmuel would be saying basically the same thing that Rav said. If you take a rib off, put the piece of the vertebrae, then it's a trefa, and Shmuel and Rav would have the same opinion over here. Now the Gemara says, nekra tzela mikara, trefa. When the tzela is taken off from its base, then it's a trefa, remini. So here we have a question on this position of tzela shenekar, mimkomo, that it's a trefa. Remini, we have this mishnah, the kama chisaron b'shidra. How much has to be missing from the spinal column in order for it to be a trefa? Beit Shammai, now first of all, we're not asking about trefa, first we're asking about tuma. How much has to be missing for it not to have tumata mate? Beit Shammai omrim shtei chuliot. It has to be two vertebrae that are missing. But till omrim chulia achat. Only one vertebrae is sufficient to make it into that it won't be metal memeol anymore. Their same opinion here, which classifies it as a chisaron, will also be the same din by trefa. So according to Beit Hillel, if one of the vertebrae is missing, it's a trefa. According to Beit Shammai, if two of them are missing, then it's a trefa. So if we were until now suggesting that Shmuel's case is, well, I'm missing a rib, and maybe I'm missing a piece of the chulia, depending if it's Rabbeinu Tam or not, that's a trefa. So it's obvious that if the whole vertebrae is missing, that it's problematic. When it says, no, that they're distinguished, we can distinguish between the cases. Hacha and Hotam. Over there, it's chulia below tzela. Over there in the Mishnah, it's talking about a case where the vertebrae is missing, but the ribs are still there. On the other hand, over here, hocha is a case, but tzela, the tzela is missing, but the chulia, the vertebrae is still intact, and they're two different cases. They're totally different cases. Gemara says, okay, bishlama tzela below chulia. I have a case like Shmuel, that makes sense, where you have the rib missing, but the vertebrae is still intact. Mishkachla, that you can find. Ela chulia below tzela? How do you have a vertebrae missing, and then the ribs are still there? The support for the ribs comes from the vertebrae. If it's missing, then how do you have ribs that remain there? You can't have a case like that. Hecha mishkachadlo. It says, no problem. Bishilhe kafle. At the end of the loins. End of the loins means the ribs that are not gdolot. We're talking about, remember before we said there are many more ribs than the 22 we're speaking about. The 22 ribs we're speaking about are the large ribs that have marrow in them. Beyond that, beyond the loins, there are a number of small ribs. Then there's the sacrum. And then there are the tail bones that come out on their back. So it could either be referring here to the vertebrae that are below the gdolot until the sacrum bone. Tosafot in other places suggests that even the sacrum bone itself could be what we're speaking about over here. But if those are taken out, they're taken out and the ribs are still intact because it's not affecting the ribs. They don't have what we classify as ribs attached to them. They might have ribs or small projectiles coming out of them. But nevertheless, those aren't classified as halachic ribs. And so therefore you could have a case where you're missing a vertebrae without the ribs missing. And therefore, the case in the Mishnah is not similar to the case of Shmuel. They're addressing totally different issues. Now, matkilar voshia, but litnei gabi kuli Beit Shammai v'chumer Beit Hillel. Why isn't this Mishnah enumerated in the cases of where Beit Shammai is mikil and Beit Hillel is machmir? Over here, Beit Shammai says that you have to be missing two in order to be a trefa, and Beit Hillel says you only need to be missing one to be a trefa. That means that Beit Shammai is mikil. So, amar lei rav, ki icha linyan tuma. When the question was asked in the Beit HaMedrash, it was asked about tuma, which is the ratio of the Mishnah, which is Ishtel. It was asked in that way, Davalu Beit Shammai L'chumra, and there Beit Shammai is L'chumra. Because in order not to be Metame Tumah at Ola Meit, according to Beit Shammai, you need to be missing two vertebrae. If you're missing two vertebrae, then it's not Metame Metah Ola Meit. Whereas if you're only missing one, it is. And there, Beit Hillel is the Kula, which is that if it's missing one, it's not Mitame Bohel. It's a two-sided coin. In one side, they're the Chumra, one side the Kula. So it's not really a case where you can say it's Beit Shammai the Kula. I don't know if there are other instances, but here the Gemara says that the question that was asked first was the question of Tumah, and therefore that's the guiding principle. The guiding principle is there, Beit Shammai is the Chumra. So that was the first question asked. So even if you want to suggest that there are other instances where it's a double-sided coin, over here, the question that was asked first was on Tumah, and there it's clear that Beit Shammai is the Chumra. All right, a skull that is shattered over the rove. So here, there's the Gemara just, it says, ask one question. By Rabbi Yirmiyah, rove gov'a or rove hekefa? We're talking about here, what is the rove of the skull? Is it mean the rove of the circumference of the skull? I mean, if you look like a yarmulke, like a kippah on that way, that's the way you would look at it. Or rove gov'a, as Rashi claims over here, rove gov'a means it comes up from the einayim, from the eyes of the animal. And then the incline of the skull, do you have to look at the rove from the eyes back as the animal's head goes up? Are we talking about the rove over there, rove gov'a? That's the way Rashi learns it. There are other Rishonim that learn differently. Others learn that the rove gov'a really starts all the way down from the nostrils. And that's talking about rove gov'a versus the circumference, which is like the kippah over here. Others talk about, does the circumference, how low down does the circumference come when we're looking at the skull? Does it come below the eyes, above the eyes? Meaning that there are many opinions of Mishonim about asking the question. In the end, it's really not relevant because it's all teku. The Gemara's answer is that it's teku. We don't know which rove that we're speaking about over here. And therefore, both of them are going to prove problematic because we're going to go to Chumra. Okay, basar chupet rove keres birubo. This is something we saw yesterday's daf we spent time on. So here, when we have the basar that's underneath, the underbelly of the animal, it's cut across the rove that's connected the rumen, then it's a trefa. So now, bai ravashi, barov karua. When we're talking about it here being cut, does it just simply have to be cut? Or barov natul? Or does it actually have to be missing? I mean, it has to be the basar is removed from there. Is simply a slice across that area enough? Or do you actually need to have the skin removed or something removed there? Gemara says, tiv shalom mitatan. You should be able to answer it from what we said yesterday in the Mishnah. Keres afni mit shenikva. When you're talking about the inner rumen, then if it has a puncture in it, it's a trefa. O shenikra rova chitzona. The outer rumen is only when the rove of it's missing. V'amri b'marova, mishmeid rav yosi b'rabi chinina. In Eretz Yisrael, they define for us what's keres apnimit and keres achitzona. Kol keres kulo, zoe keres apnimit. The entire rumen is called the keres apnimit. Vezehu keres achitzona. What's the case of keres achitzona? Basar chufet rova keres. There you see. And over there it says, in the Mishnah, it says, osha nikra, or it was ripped. So here's the answer to your question. Where it says, midu time elo lishmuel. Midu time elo lishmuel. Rabbi Yaakov ben Nachmani, Amar Shmuel, makom shein bo mila. Can't answer this question according to Shmuel. The statement was made by Shmuel. And Shmuel has a different definition of keres apnimi and keres achitzona. Because Shmuel, yesterday we brought down, what's considered to be keres apnimi? That's the area inside of the rumen that doesn't have the villi in it. It's the area that's not carpeted inside of it, which is the beginning or the entrance to the rumen out of the esophagus. So that's clear. He doesn't believe that the basar chuvet rova basar is the keres achitzona. So you're trying to prove me something from the Mishnah, from a different Amora, from the Bnei Eretz Yisrael that learned it that way. Shmuel doesn't learn it that way. And the statement that we're trying to define over here is Shmuel's statement. So you don't have an answer for me. You can't prove anything to me because Shmuel doesn't hold of that explanation of the Mishnah. The next trefa in the Mishnah is drusata ze'ev, and it is being clawed by a wolf. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, bibehema, when it comes to animals, mina ze'ev ulamala, it's from the size of a wolf or the ferocity of the wolf and upwards. Ubofot, when it comes to fowl, mina neitz ulamala, it's from the hawk and upwards. Meaning that has to be something that is bigger or more ferocious than that in order to cause the problem. Limute mai, what are you coming to exclude over here? Ilem in limute chatul, you're coming to exclude a cat, tanina, that we already have explicitly. Udrusat hazev. The Mishnah says that it has to be drusat hazev. Bechite ma kamash malan de ze'ev begasa namidoris. Maybe it's coming to teach us that even in behema gasa, a ze'ev can work, that a wolf is enough by behema, and behema means any behema, daka or gasa. And maybe it's not coming to exclude a chatul. It's coming to just teach us that Ze'ev works even in large animals. That's what Rav comes to teach us, that Ze'ev also means that a Chatul is not included. I would think maybe a Ze'ev works in Gasa, but not a Chatul. But a Chatul will work with a Behema Daka, will work with a smaller animal. But God says, no, Bahatznan. In our Mishnah, we have Rabbi Yehuda tells us that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Jusata Ze'ev B'daka, that a Ze'ev works by the smaller animals, with Jusata Ri B'gasa. The larger animals require a jusa of a lion. V'chitem Rabbi Yehuda Miflag Polik. Well, just say that Rabbi Yehuda argues on the Tanakama. Rabbi Yehuda is coming to say something after the Tanakama. That we can't say, because I'm a Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefet, I'm a Rabbi Yilal, lo ba Rabbi Yehuda l'faresh divrei chachamim. That the Rabbi Yehuda is coming to qualify the statement of the chachamim. He's not coming to argue on them, he's coming to explain their statement. And since he's explaining their statement, we know now that a ze'ev only works by a daka, and you need an ari by a gasa, and therefore when the Mishnah says ze'ev, it must be that it's excluding a chatul, a cat. So then what's Rav adding for us? We still haven't figured out what Rav's adding for us. When it says gavra gavra karamit. Wait a minute. That's no question. That's Rabbi Yilal. Rabbi Yilal learns that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue on the Chachamim. You know what? Rav thinks that Rabbi Yehuda does argue on the Chachamim. And so if Rav thinks that Rabbi Yehuda argues on the Chachamim, then Rav is coming to teach us something new. He's coming to teach us that not only that's not just that the Zeiv works by a Gasa, but a Zeiv only works by a Daka, and a Chatul won't work by a Daka. So Rav's statements in the context of his own opinion that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing. Rabbi Yehuda, you're right. Not a Chiddush Rav statement, but he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Ibai Deima, the Olam Nemute Chatul. Now, I come here to exclude a chatul, but ma'u de tema, urcho de milta ktani. I would think that it's just giving the normal case. Who is the normal predator over here? It's the wolf. And maybe the chatul will be included as well. Mashmalan, that no, this isn't just normal course. We're not just giving you examples of what's normal. We're giving you the threshold above which something is considered jusaranat, and therefore a chatul would not be included over here. So that's the chiddush of Rav. The chiddush of Rav is don't just read this as an ordinary case. No, this is really the threshold. In the first instance, he says that it's come to teach us the Chiddush that don't just say that the Ze'ev applies to the Gasa, but by Daka, Chatul could apply. He's telling us, no, Ze'ev is the threshold both by the Gasa and the Daka. Amrav Amram, Amrav Chista. Shusat Chatul, Vinimia. When it comes to a cat, and a Nimia is a marten. You can see in Rashi, he says it's a martarina. Bigdi'im utvayim. In the smallest of the small animals, in the goats, they can be doreis. And a weasel is big enough where his predatory manner can affect an oaf, a fowl. So now, may I ask a question? When it comes to the attack or the clawing of a cat, a hawk, or a marten, it only works if they actually puncture the innards. I mean, they actually have to put a hole in there, which means they don't have a din of drusa. So here we have a specific breita that says that there is no drusa by a chatul. So how could Rav Chista claim that there is? When it says v'tisbura, can this breita really make sense? Neitz lo doris. You can really say in the breita that a hawk doesn't doris? That's not. Our Mishnah says explicitly that the hawk is doris. When it says halo kasha, there's no steer between the breita and our Mishnah, because kan be'ofot, our Mishnah is talking about a hawk that attacks other fowl. Over there it can be doris. Kan, over here in our Mishnah, the breita that we just brought, we're talking about animals. There, the hawk can have no impact. Mikomakom, the Rav Chista kasha. Rav Chista has a problem here because he says a chatul is dores, whereas the Braita says a chatul is not dores. So, hu damar ki hai tano. He holds like this tana called Ribi, the Tanya. We have a Braita, but Ribi Omer. Lo emru ein drusa elamakom she'ein matzilin. The only time that we say that there is no drusa by these smaller animals like a cat is only when there's nobody to save his prey or his victim. Of a makom sheish matzilim, if there are third parties or outside help for its victim, then yesh drusa, because it gets really angry that it's not succeeding or somebody else is trying to save it, and therefore it becomes a dores. O makom shein matzilim ein drusa. Is that really true? Where there's no outside savior, there's no drusa. V'hai tarnagola, gola davai be Rav Kahana. There was this chicken that was in the house of Rav Kahana. Derohot chatul batra. It's being chased down by a cat. V'aldi drona, it ran into the room or into the hallway in the house. V'itchadi dasha b'apei, and it slammed the door shut on the cat. U'machia the dasha b'sichufai, and the cat clawed at the door, swung its claws into the door. V'ishtakachala chamisha korte dama, and on the door we found 5 spots of blood, meaning that the cat was inserting its eres. Now you have to know that the chachamim believe over here. And Rashi notes this over here, that when we're talking about drusa over here, drusa means that the animal's claws have some sort of eris venom embedded in them, and they insert, when they go into the animal, that venom goes into the animal, and therefore causes it to be a trefa, even when it doesn't puncture. So here we see the cat is doing that, and we see blood coming out, meaning that there was some venom that was coming out. The frustration caused by the chicken saving itself and slamming the door on the cat is equivalent of having third parties come in and try to save it. And it got the cat angry. If the cat's angry, it's going to be dores. So that'll be the shita of Rav Chista. A cat can be dores when it's angry. He'll hold like Rebbe that there is such an instance where a cat can be angry. Our Mishnah, or when we're talking about the Zev is the threshold, that's the case when it's not angry. But he'll say when it's angry, it is a cutoff. For Rabbanan. Now, what about the Rabbanan that argue here on Rebbe? Zirai idluhu. Yes, they have venom. Velo kali zirai. But it's not a strong venom. It's not strong enough to affect the animals that it's attacking. And therefore, even if it's dores, that drusa does not have impact on the animals. Ikadamri. There's some that say, hamani biribihi. The breita is ribi. Not that Rav Chista is holding like ribi, but that breita we brought down is ribi. The tanya. Biribi omer lo amru yesh drusa el makom sheesh matzilim. We only say that yesh drusa el makom sheesh matzilim. Avo makom sheein matzilim, if there's no one to save him, ain't drusa. Makom sheein matzilim, ain't drusa. Is it really true when there's nobody to save him there that we don't have this case of drusa, it doesn't insert the venom? Vahai tarnagole, tzahave bei rav kahano, from the story of the chicken again, the ratar chatul batra, it was being chased down by the cat, vahali drona, got inside, and then beat yachad dasha, it slammed the door ba'pei on its face. Machil dasha, took a swipe at the door b'sikhufei with its claw. Vichakalei chamisha korte dama, and you saw 5 splats of blood showing that there was venom coming up. Where I answer again, matzalet tzmaka, namika tzalet tachirim. That saving itself is equivalent of someone else being there, and therefore it causes, it instigates the animal to bring out the venom. So now in the ikadamri, it'll work out this way. The Rav Chista says that even in a place, she'ein matzilim, yesh drusa. He holds that there's always drusa. Whether it has savior or not savior, he has things as a drusa. So therefore, in the case of the Ika de Amre, Rav Chista is going to hold that even in a place where there's no savior, that they are dores. The chatul is always dores, whether there's a savior or no savior. Our Mishnah, that used the, why did our Mishnah mention only zev and a threshold of zev? Because there we're talking about imrei ravrave, we're talking about large animals. Remember, even Rav Chista only said that it applies to the smallest of animals, to the gdim and tlaim, but it doesn't apply to the larger animals. And therefore, our Mishnah is addressing larger animals, and that is not the issue that's being addressed by Rav Chista. And the Braita that we brought, the Braita that said that a chatul is not dores, that'll be authored by Ribi. That one who says that it's only dores when it reaches into the chalal until it gets all the way in, which says that a chatul is not dores, that'll be Ribi. And a case, Shein Matzilim. It's a case where there was nobody to save it there, and therefore there's no drisa, there's no venom. And that's why, by the Braita, it's saying that there was no dores by the chatul. And Rabbanan Paligale, and the Rabbanan are going to argue on his position. Again, argue on his position and say, either they can hold like Rav Chista, Rav Chista can claim that the Rabbanan are holding like him, or the Rabbanan can argue on both, Rav Chista and Rebbe, and say that a chatul is not dores across the board, and there is never any drisa by the chatul. As opposed to the first Lashon, where Rav Chista is holding like Ribi, and he is saying the same thing, is that the chatul only has a drisa when it's being provoked and when there's a savior there. He's holding like Ribi, and that's the case where he says it's venomous. Whereas the Braita, where it says no, even Rav Chista would agree to, and that would be the position of Ribi, is a case where there was no venom being inserted because there was no savior. And the Chachamim will argue and say that the chatul across the board is never dores. Okay, we'll stop over there.